more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple. Well, today, you know, it's a treat. Every now and again, we do these things we call Dr. G Turns the Tables. This is number four. Wow, already at number four. And it's really where I turn to my very dear friend, Pastor Tim Jones. He's an ordained minister, a graduate of the USC Film School, just all around brilliant, nice guy. And he's in downtown Denver. And I can't decide whether you look like the guy at McDonald's taking my order or somebody like at the NASA Space Flight Center. I'm going to go with the latter because it's more flattering.
I just, you know, I could be your personal call center. 1-800-DR-G. How may I direct your call?
And if you've been following these journeys, you know that this is the time when we kind of let our hair down a little bit, have a little fun. Tim gets to ask me any question he wants. I have no idea what he's going to ask me, but it's always fun and good. And as I say, you are in downtown Denver, although you've been traveling. You were in LA, right? And then in Memphis. And may I ask about, you know, we've been following your, what do we call it? Love life, I guess?
Yes. For those following along in this journey.
Yeah.
We're 10, just over 10 months.
Wow.
Of dating.
So Tim, 10 months ago, met this wonderful young woman named Anna through the internet, was it? Through the internet?
Yes, through online dating. Yep.
Okay. And we used this opportunity before I turned the tables and let him start asking me. He's been very gracious to allow me to ask him how it's going. Obviously, I care a great deal. I've known Tim for many, many years. I love him like a brother. And so I'm always praying for you and Anna.
Thank you.
She's got a little girl, June, who's now, what, 5 years old?
6 years old.
Six? Okay, already.
Six, right. And taking over the world.
Yeah. So how's it going with you and Anna? You were recently with her, right?
In Memphis, sweating in Memphis with 70% humidity, but it's going well. You know, we were talking about later in life. A lot of people are deciding to get married later in life. That's definitely illustration A here. And it's difficult of bringing two lives together, especially when you have a child, you have work, you have your relationships. So we're just being challenged and challenging ourselves to just ask that question, what is God saying? And how do we follow? And how are we going to respond to God's will, voice, direction in our lives? Because it is challenging and very complex. But we're grateful, trusting that God is going to show us what we need to do.
I love it. And Anna is a very solid Christian woman, which I love. You know, the Bible warns us against being unevenly yoked. You're certainly not the case here. And you mentioned about getting married later in life. Would you mind telling, I know how old you are.
42. Okay. Almost 43.
You know that, you know, you're still a young pup. You're still in the
prime. I appreciate that.
Barely approaching the prime of your life. And we're going to continue praying for you and Anna and June, and please give her and June my love. All right. So this is it. This is the moment where I hand over the reins to you.
Oh, man.
Buckle
up.
Okay, here we go. Oh, before I, but listen, one little thing. Look at this. I've got my own sippy cup. Can you tell?
Uh-oh.
It says science plus God, buddy.
When look am I going to get one of those?
I'm getting serious, okay? Isn't that pretty?
Okay.
It was a Christmas gift from the good folks at K-Love and
I love it.
Erwin Radio, and I really appreciate it, but I thought I'd show it off for the first time right here. Turning
Very
the
cool.
tables. All right, Tim, take it away.
Love it. Well, as you know, I love movies and television. And man, some people say we're in a new golden age of Just some of the content out there is really well done and striking. But you, we first met when you came to LA to make a movie. And yeah. I know you recently did a podcast on this. But my question is, would you make another movie? And if so, what would be the topic?
The short answer is yes, I would, Tim. But boy, I tell you, making Little Red Wagon, which is the movie you're referring to, it's a family movie. It's award-winning. It's on Amazon Prime. I'm giving it a little plug. But it's on Amazon Prime right now. And every now and again, my wife and I check on how it's doing. And it's like up there, 4.67 stars out of 5, which is fantastic. You know how hard it is to get that kind of rating from people. So it's a movie we're very, very proud about, but it was very hard. It was difficult. We shot it in Charleston, South Carolina. Talk about humidity. We shot it, you know, in late spring, and it was already hot and humid. In fact, at one point, I think it was our final scene, one of our actresses actually collapsed. She fainted. And so we had to call 911. And literally, it was their final shot. It's a big crane shot. And
of course,
if you see the movie, look way in the back of the shot and you'll see some police lights. Well, that's the fire engine and the EMT and all the who showed up to minister to our fainted actress. But she was fine and she was terrific. I would want to make a movie that I think inspires people, enriches people. There's so much, how should we say it? Just bad stuff out there. You know, we don't, my wife and I do not watch a lot of TV, practically nothing at all. But we do treat ourselves to a movie now and again, especially on the weekends. We have Amazon Prime. We don't have Netflix anymore. We ditched that. We didn't like what was on Netflix. But I got my son recently and his girlfriend a Peacock network, and apparently they're liking it. But anyway, and we'll go through like literally hundreds of titles. And maybe if we're lucky, we'll come up with maybe 10 that we like. So I want to make movies that inspire, enrich, entertain. You know, I'm working with some partners right now. I can't talk too much about it right now, but I will in future turns of tables. I will be able to talk more freely about it, but we are specifically aiming to produce more movies and television programming that the entire family could sit down to and not just laugh and cry, but at the end feel like, okay, this was a good investment of my time. Maybe I learned something that I didn't know before. Maybe I was feeling a little depressed and now I'm feeling a little bit better about life and myself. That's the kind of movie I would want to make all day long and twice on Sunday. Does that make sense, Tim?
Love it. Yep. Absolutely.
I hope that doesn't come across as Pollyanna. I mean that sincerely. I mean, it took us years to make Little Red Wagon. So when you decide to make a movie, you're deciding to basically set aside everything else you're doing in life for maybe 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is what we started in 2006. We finished in 2010. You do the arithmetic. That was 4 years. And by the way, all my friends in Hollywood said, "How did you do it so quick?" I was like, because they labor long and hard. 10, 15, 20 years is not unusual. And sometimes you invest 10 years of your life and the movie never gets made. I could name names right now. I won't. But I have friends in the business, and you do too. You know what I'm talking about, Tim, because you're in this business as well. There's one movie in particular. Oh my gosh, I've been hearing about it for more than 20 years and it's still not made. And if it's made, it would be terrific. But for one reason or another, and now, of course, COVID on top of everything else. Sure. So yeah, so that's what I would do. For sure, I would want to make a movie again.
I've heard the average movie, someone has spent an average of 8 years working on that movie once you see it, which is incredible. Do you think it's worth that kind of investment? One film?
It's a really good question. Look, let's compare it to writing a book. You know, I've got a new book coming out. I worked on that for about 2 years. A movie, like you just said, on average, 8 years. And that's average.
Yes.
I was lucky to do it in 4. I mean, that was considered to be lightning fast. an op-ed that I would write maybe takes me a day, if that much. I've needed to bang. If there was some big astronomy story going on, you know, it'd take me maybe hours, just bang it out real quick. So, yeah, I know what you're asking.
We know the impact movies can have. I mean, I certainly do, because there's a handful of movies that have impacted my life that has informed, inspired, equipped. I mean, all those things.
Let me, that's a really profound question. I started off in print, writing articles, okay, for science magazines, okay? And then I thought to myself, gee, you know, there's only so much you can achieve or communicate through words alone, okay? I thought, I'd like to add some emotion to that. And so when I was asked years and years ago, and I was still in school, I had a friend of mine, he said, you know, you ought to apply for the AAAS Mass Media Science Fellowship. And I said, what's that? Well, the AAAS stands for the American Association for the Advancement of Science. It is the oldest, largest kind of scientific professional organization in the country, all right? And back then, they were starting something they called the Mass Media Science Fellowship. They were going to pick a small number of students who were in the sciences, training to be scientists, and for a summer, they were going to place them somewhere, like at Time Magazine or Newsweek or Washington Post or the New York Times or the LA Times or whatever. So when my friend said that, you know, you ought to apply. You're perfect for this. You know, number one, you're training yourself to be a physicist. Also, now you've already written articles. I mean, come on. I said, you know what? No, I'm not really interested in a summer internship to what? Write more science stories. I'm already doing that. And then a little bulb went off. I said, however, I said, would they consider like placing me if I were to win at a TV station? Because in my mind, I thought, okay, not only could I add emotion to my words, right? But if I could be on camera, the whole body language and personality and everything would come across, it'd be much more powerful than what I can just get on paper in words. So he said, you know, I don't know, but try it. So I was actually, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was, I had a lot of chutzpah. But on the application, I basically said, Tim, and this is the truth. I said something like, you know, I'm really interested in winning this fellowship, but only if I can get placed on a TV station. Otherwise, I'm not interested. Basically, otherwise, just keep it, you know, and I can't, but I think in retrospect, the Lord just egging me on to the next level. Well, I ended up winning and I was placed at KPIX, which is the CBS affiliate in San Francisco. And I spent an entire summer there, interned under Wendy Takuda, who was married to Richard Hall, who was the son of Monty Hall from Let's Make a Deal. Now, if you're old enough, you'll remember that. And if you're not, it goes right over your head.
I have no idea who those people are.
Wendy was not only an anchor at KPIX, but she was the science editor there. So I learned a lot. I was never on camera, but I learned a lot about the television business. The point I'm making is, getting back to your question about whether I'd make a movie again, the answer is yes. But why is really what you're at.
That's right. That's right.
Why would I invest that many years into making a movie when I could knock off an article or I could write a book or whatever? And I think it's, you go from words, which is just words, to radio, which is just your voice and all that you can communicate through your voice. But then you go to television where you have the whole, I mean, you have the full thing. I mean, right? And then you go to movies where you now can control the reality of the movie. You can control what it looks like, it feels like, the story it's telling, and then you add music. Tim, have you ever seen a rough cut of a scene? Yeah, of course you have. You've seen a rough cut of a movie, a scene that you've filmed out in the field, let's say. It's only got the sound of the actors, right? And whatever natural sound there might be, there's no music. But then you add the music, and suddenly that same scene just comes alive. So maybe you've just helped me just right now, helped me understand why I would invest another 5 or more years of my life making another movie. I think it's because then you're bringing to the task of communicating something important, an important message, the full orchestra of techniques and the full weaponry of communication is what I want to say.
That's right.
But for that reason, it has to be an important movie. It can't That's be right. garbage. I'm not going to wait. Listen, you know, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life. You're not. You're still like, you know, in the second quarter.
Halftime.
But the thing is that I don't want to waste what years the good Lord is going to grant me producing garbage. You know, the reason I'm doing this podcast, Science Plus God, when K-Love came to me was because I thought, I've never done a podcast. That's adding another weapon, you know, another arrow to my quiver, as it were. It's enabling me to have a one-on-one conversation with my fellow traveler. I've never done that before. I've broadcast on television where I'm broadcasting to millions of people at once, right? But I love the intimacy of this, where I'm talking to my fellow traveler listening right now, one-on-one, having this ongoing weekly conversation, and it's proven to be fantastic. So anyway, that's a long answer. I know long.
Well, we'll just wrap it up there
on the lightning round, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But because you asked thought-provoking questions. So anyway, that's it.
Well, you just used a very strong word, weaponry.
Yeah.
And I would agree. I use the word nuclear. When you bring the visual art of a camera shot together with lighting, together with color, together with acting and performance, together, and then layering in the power of music and editing, oh my gosh, it's nuclear what you can do. And it is weaponized because, and that's what Hollywood banks on, is we're going to connect with your heart in order to basically for box office numbers and money in the end. But I'm wondering, do you agree with this statement? The one who tells the stories or has the loudest microphone in the culture rules the culture?
I think, unfortunately, the answer is probably yes. Okay. And I'll tell you why. I came across a study just yesterday of college age students. Okay. And they were asked a series of questions about COVID. And I don't want to get into COVID too much on this journey, but it was appalling to me they have such an exaggerated sense of fear. They have such an exaggerated fear of this. Now, a little fear is prudent, right? You have to fear this virus. It's a nasty virus. It's taking lives, no question about it. But their fear was just over the top. And why is that? And these are intelligent young people. It's because the media has just been the loudest voice in the room for the last year and a half, okay? And it's now influenced these young people's worldview about the virus. And that is tragic, in my opinion. However, here's the good news. You know my mantra, do your homework. By that, I mean you should not listen to any one voice, including mine, by the way. But listen to other voices as well. And then you can begin discerning. And sometimes it's the quiet voice that you'll come across in your search when you're doing your homework. It's that little quiet voice that will speak loudest to you. Mm-hmm. And what is the ultimate quietest voice? Tim, you know what it is. It's God's. God's quiet voice sometimes gets drowned out by the loudest voices in our culture. And as Christians, that's why we're called upon to quiet ourselves. Go somewhere where it's quiet, either inside or an outdoor space. It's quiet. And I've done journeys before, right, on quiet spaces, on what I call sacred spaces. So, yes, I think, unfortunately, the loudest voice does control the culture to some degree, but it doesn't have to. And in particular, it doesn't have to rule you as an individual. So maybe the culture at large, but you don't need to go along with the culture. Remember what the Bible says in Romans, do not conform to the world's, in other words, go along with the crowd, right? Don't go along with the culture. We Christians are called to be mavericks, right?
That's right.
We're supposed to be the resistance against that cultural pressure that's on us all. So in that case, we're called upon to hear the quietest, the softest, the most loving voice in the room. And that's God's voice. And that's what I try to do every single day.
I agree with you. And I am passionate about this idea, and I'm borrowing this from somebody else, but I don't know who said it, but believers should be the best storytellers.
Yes.
We should be telling the best stories because we got a corner on the market in terms of the greatest story ever told, which is a gigantic, beautiful, wonderful story with all sorts of tension and drama and conflict. But redemption is coming. So how do we as believers in our everyday lives, if we're not filmmakers, tell good stories, tell the truth, reveal the beauty in our world, reveal the good in our lives, and tell redemptive stories with our lives?
It's a very good question. And I would say, as a practical matter, is to read the Bible. Why? Because it's there that you get to understand what God expects of us, what God wants from us, and what God offers us. He offers us a second chance, and a third chance, and a fourth chance. And these are the concepts, these are the precepts, these are the truths that make for great storytelling. Do you agree?
It's because it's truth that has resonated through the centuries.
It's timeless.
Well, Michael, we've been talking about the power of narrative, the power of stories, and especially the dominant stories in our culture, and how important it is to discern, but also with our lives, tell redemptive stories and have a posture of really kind of living out what we believe, and that it's all going to be good in the end because God is love. Jesus is love.
Can I just interrupt? I love that. I love what you just said, brother. Was we've been talking movies, radio, print? Forget about all that. Each of our lives is a movie. That's deep what you just said, and I just didn't want it to fly by because that makes me think about every day is like a scene in the movie of Dr. G's life, and same with you. And same with our fellow traveler who's listening right now. Yeah. What kind of movie are you projecting? Is it one that gives people hope? Is it one that's full of love and light and life, like the God we worship as Christians?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it coming from a hateful, dark place, like so many of these movies about serial killers and rapists and spies and all this sort of thing? It's so dark. So anyway, thank you for that, brother. I know you were turning the corner and I kind of messed you up there, but I thank you for that. That's a beautiful way to end that portion of our turning the tables there. That's beautiful. Thank you. Okay. We have time maybe for what? One or two more questions?
And this is, I think, in kind of sums up our conversation today of if we are living redemptive lives, and if our faith guides us through an unbelievable year and a half, we can all agree, and it just continues. As Jesus followers who believe that God is still love, God is still tracking, that the story is not over.
Yes.
This universal story is far from over.
Yes.
How do we show up in our world right now as you know what, Jesus, I've been reflecting on this, of how do I show up with my friends who are just politically charged and angry and really fearful? I think fear is behind these extreme reactions that I've seen in my friends.
Yes.
But Jesus calls us, to love God, love others, love our neighbors. We're called to be peacemakers, right?
Yes.
So even though we may have some fear of what's going on, how do we show up at this moment in time in our world?
That's a great question. And you know, right now I am doing media interviews left and right, just every day, lots of media interviews leading up to the launch of my new book, which by the time journey is put online, the book will have already come out. But right now we're about 10 days short of the launch. So I'm doing a lot of interviews, and what I'm telling the hosts, or what I'm telling the publicist, my publicist, to tell the hosts, is that I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to talk policy. Okay, I don't think people want to hear any more of that. We are just overwhelmed with voices scolding each other, canceling each other. It's just horrible. I don't want to be a part of that, Tim. So one of the ways I'm showing up to be a kind of a breath of fresh air from what we're experiencing right now as a society is to say to people, I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to talk policy. I want to talk about eternity. I want to talk about truth. I want to talk about your spirit. I want to talk about what makes you unique. Why did God make you? This is not the first time the world goes through tough times. You know, my dad fought in World War II. He was an infantryman, and he lost hearing in both ears. I can't imagine what that must have been like. He watched his buddies blown up right before his very eyes. I can't imagine what that's like. And yeah, as nasty as this virus is, and as contentious as today's politics are, we've been through really tougher times than this. Think of the revolution that gave rise to our country. I can't imagine that, even though I lived in New England when I was teaching at Harvard for many, many years. So the way I'm showing up, Tim, is to try to be that voice that invites people to have a broader perspective. Yeah, you can get so wrapped up in the daily headlines. What do you wake up to in the morning to read the data head? No. Step back. Look at the history of humankind. What in the end matters, in my opinion, is what is at the center of your worldview? Because we all have a worldview, and this is a subject I deal with a lot in my new book. Worldviews, because they're all important. What's at the center, or who's at the center of your worldview? Because whoever or whatever that is, that's your God. That's mm-hmm. the thing you worship most. That's mm-hmm. the one thing around which your entire world revolves, entire life revolves. It affects everything you say and do. It affects the way you see everything, including today's headlines. It includes how you see yourself. Are you an accident of nature, or are you a deliberate creation of God with a God-given destiny, as I believe you are? The answers to those questions are going to determine how you're going to cope with what we're going through right now. And if at the center of your worldview are the news headlines, good luck to you. You're going to be yanked around like in the most awful way. Talk about a roller coaster ride. No, I'm not riding the roller coaster of the daily headlines. Because at the center of my world is a God I know who loves me and who understands what we're going through. So much of it, all of it in the end, is the result of our rebellion against God. That's plain and simple. And yet, despite that rebellion, our rebelliousness against Him, He's extending His arms wide open to each of us and say, I still love you. Can you come back to me? And Tim, if all these people who are shouting each other right now were to understand that they are children of God, each and every one of them, equal in God's sight, okay? That each of us is a child of God with a God-given destiny, with a purpose in life. And the purpose is not to shout at each other, not to cancel each other, but to love one another despite the difficulties of life. That's hard to do. I get it. I don't always succeed in doing that day to day. But in the long run, I do my very best to rise above the shouts, to rise above the noise, the contentious noise, the cancellation, and all the rest of it. And I really try to be that voice of reason. So when I go on these radio and TV shows, people who are interviewing me about my new book or what I'm doing on this podcast, I try to remind people that this that we're going through will pass. It will come and it will go. COVID will fade into the background, become probably like the common flu, okay? It will. Count on it, all right? But what won't come and go is God's love for us and the decision each of us needs to make in life, which is, do we love Him in return, or do we just simply shake our fist at Him and hate Him because of the world we live in, the world we've created for ourselves? So for me, that's how I'm trying to show up during these difficult times, Tim.
Mm. I'm excited to read your book. This is exciting. So the book's for sale.
You can buy it right now. Yeah, you can buy it right now. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Tyndale's, Books A Million, Christian Books, all, you know, wherever books are sold. It has been nominated for 2 major book awards. Really was a surprise to me. We're waiting to see. I guess we hear about the finalists in September, and then the winners will be announced at the beginning of the new year. So we have a little time to wait. But I'm honored just to be nominated. Also, even as we speak right now, the book Believing Is Seeing is number one and the Amazon hot new release in various categories. My wife just informed me just minutes before we started this journey is that now I've broken into the top 10 in the category of physics as well. So cosmology, science, and religion. This book, I'm telling you, Tim, I'm so excited about this book. I think this book is needed for our time. So for any parent or grandparent or college student who is wondering what and who to believe, I've written this book to give you some guidance. Not because I know it all. I don't. Far from it. I'll be the first to admit it. But I have learned quite a bit in my journey through life. And now this book, I'm sharing what I've learned with those who are perhaps not as certain about their own journeys. I'm hoping that it will be a blessing to them, an inspiration to them. And they'll learn some really cool science along the way, packaged in a very entertaining, very informative way. And also, I spice the book with a lot of my anecdotes from my years as a reporter, as a journalist. So I think it's the full package. I'm hopeful. But you know, I've surrendered it to God. I've written it. I've done my part. I've written a book. I've got a great publisher in Tyndale. Fantastic people. I've worked with HarperCollins, and I've worked with Zahn. I've worked with all the major publishers over the years. I love these folks at Tyndale. So, brother, thank you so much again for being such a good sport. You still got that Truce Media Studios in downtown Denver. Want to give you a shout out on that. Hopefully, we'll be in Denver. I will be in Denver in the next several weeks or so. Look forward to then. But until then, thank you. God bless you. God bless Anna, and God bless little June. Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments? Questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.